Hi guys, welcome to Down Under Dynasty, well, it's the title, episode 26. I'm your host, as never, SNS Format, and with me today, I've got the fantastic at Mark Bull is here. How are you, Bull?
Yeah, not too bad. A little bit of a change in scheduling of when we're recording to get together this week, so it's just the two of us, but yeah, it should be good.
Yeah, hopefully we have our fearless leader back soon. Shout out to live from the Ben, but we'll get cracking on. So today we just want to talk about obviously some news. It's been a bit of a graveyard the last couple of weeks. I think this plays down all over the shop. So we thought we'd talk about some injuries and then maybe just some win now strategies, because that's what we're sort of trying to do, right? We're trying to win. Or, you know, if you're on the other end of the scale and you're rebuilding, now's the time to take advantage of those win now teams. Also, I'm in a lot of leagues with Bull too, so probably pick his brain a bit for some trades I can send him later. But the first bit of news, obviously, CMC. So that's really disappointing. I think he sort of started to look good a bit. At the start of the year, was back to that RB1, I reckon close to it anyway, the RB1 tier, at least, if he's not the RB1. Taylor wasn't on fire. Did his hammy, sort of came back again, had a couple of good games, and then now obviously doesn't look like, you know, career threatening or anything like that, but he is obviously on IR for the rest of the season just because once you're on IR twice, automatic season outage. So probably the right best thing for CMC. But what are you doing, Bully, if you're in a vacuum? And then if you win now, you know, obviously we're trading and win now, but what are you, what's the outlook for you for CMC?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're a, he's a player that I'd be hands off completely. I don't really know if I'd want to be buying him in either position. I think he's played 9 games in 2 years. So he's not, and of those 9 games, I think he's only finished 5. So when he's on the field, he's still, you know, putting up numbers, but we've seen how quickly those 26-year-old and 25-year-old running backs drop off a cliff. You know, we've seen Ezekiel Elliott and Joe Mixon have a resurgence this year, and they're kind of the exception to the norm, being those second contract running backs having a resurgence, but you know, even Derrick Henry that we thought was invincible, he's now those injuries are starting to get to him. So I think I'd be hands off CMC. I think if I owned him, I'd be looking to move him to a team that just missed the playoffs, or, you know, a team that potentially a package deal to a team that just made the playoffs, you know, send a win now piece plus CMC to them for someone that they had on IR or something like that. I'd be trying to reduce my exposure. I think there's nice. Probably half a dozen running backs now I'd rather have over him, and you could probably make a case that the likes of Dobbins and Akers I'd almost rather have over him.
Well, that was my next question. You know, what sort of price are we looking at? I had a couple of names written down in our show sheet. So for Mixon or CMC, straight up,
Mixon.
Yep. Mixon strongly. Easy Mixon or close?
Yeah, easy Mixon. Like Mixon's finally got a competent quarterback. He's finally got some wide receivers that, you know, take some of the pressure off him and stop him from stacking the box, and he's getting the workload that we thought he'd get. So while he's starting to get long in the tooth, for me, it's a pretty easy one there with Mixon.
He's still pretty young too, right? Like he's still on the younger side. I think he came in very young as well. What about Dobbins, CMC? I think you mentioned that too. That was one of the show sheets, Dobbins or CMC.
I'd probably take CMC. But if you started to get into a deal where it was a Dobbins and a, you know, mid first in 2022 or 2023, I'm probably leading the Dobbins side. I think straight
it's close enough.
Yeah, you could make the case for it. I think I'd probably lean on CMC because coming into next year, I think he'll have that spike in value and you'll be able to sell him probably for, you know, back in that RB 3-4 range. But, yeah, you're taking CMC there with the purpose of trading him. You're not taking CMC with the purpose of starting him next year.
Yeah, look, I think I'm with you. I want those healthier, younger running backs, even though Dobbins is not healthy, but he's younger. So I'd probably take the Dobbins side probably a little bit more than you, just because I love Dobbins. Mixon, I'm on the Mixon side fairly strongly. what about, you know, maybe instead of taking on the risk and trading these younger guys, if you're trading a couple of older guys, so maybe you get a Fournette and another piece, Fournette in the first or Fournette and Eckler for CMC. Is that the tip of your fancy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really nice move if you'll win now. Like, you're getting two guys that'll, like, if you can get that deal done, even if you've got to put something like a second on top of CMC to get that deal done, if you're in the playoffs, that's a deal that can put you over the edge. And you know what? Eckler and Fournette are just as likely to be good value next year as they are this year.
Just lost lights, Bully. Yeah, look, I think
that's I'm in the office, and I'd say that's people leaving for the night downstairs and turn my light off.
We've got to see your beautiful face, mate. We can't have that.
I don't know. Like, I there's so much uncertainty around the running back room, and I'm a big fan of during the off season, unless it's a Jonathan Taylor, Najee Harris situation where you're confident that they're not going to bring in someone, you know, to undercut them. I'd be offloading most of the running backs this year. Like, Mixon, you know, he's getting older. Yes, he's had a career year this year, but he's getting older. Austin Eckler's not young anymore. Derrick Henry's coming off the back of a Liz Frank injury. Fournette's not guaranteed a contract. Elliott's getting, you know, eaten into with Pollard. Like, it's not great, the running back landscape at the moment. And for all the depth that wide receiver now has and tight end now has, picking a running back that you're willing to build a team around isn't easy.
Bully hates the running backs, people. You heard it here first. Zero RB truther, Mr. Marple.
They just drop off on value so quickly. Like, you know, week three or four, once that first injury for CMC happened, he was still the RB1. Whereas, you know, he's dropped down to outside the RB10 for a lot of people now, and they just lose value so quickly. Whereas even like someone like a DeAndre Hopkins has had an average season this year by his standards, and you know, some of that is Kyler, some of that is him getting older, some of that is more competition. He's still, you know, it's harder to find someone to move him, but when you move him, you still get good value. Whereas with those running backs, when they fall off so quick.
Yeah, probably you wait till Hopkins is back in the field for a week or two and then make the move, although you're getting close to that finals now, aren't you? So maybe one more week. I reckon the move is if you're trading for players, you know, maybe the older players, if you've got CMC and you win now, I'll be looking at the Fournette Eckler type of deal that we mentioned. But I think it might be a buy. I think for me, the price you can get him at, you know, everything you say is correct. You know, he's getting old. He's no longer the RB1. One more injury and his value is going to plummet. But I think something you were saying about getting him and flipping him next year, I think, there you go.
I think if you've got, you know, if you've got a Fournette or a Henderson or a Damian Harris or one of those running backs that, you know, their future is super uncertain next year and CMC is owned by a win now team, I think, you know, if you can flip a Henderson or a Damian Harris plus a small piece for CMC now, that's a good move, because I can't see the Hendersons and Damian Harris's, those role running backs. You know, you look at someone like a James Robinson as well, like they'll put up points, but they're not going to, you're not guaranteed that they'll be the RB1 of their own team next year. So if you can get out from under them, get CMC, whose value will go back up over the next 3 to 4 months as we move into the non-point scoring season, then, you know, it gives you an opportunity to sell them in the off-season or for a package of players, or, you know, if someone comes on in this, you know, in this draft, you move them for a pick and a player or something like that. CMC's nice. Value will go nice. Back up, whereas Eckler, probably at peak value, Henderson, Harris, Robinson, even Aaron Jones, they're probably at the highest their value will ever be again.
Yeah, look, they're not going up. Harris, maybe there's a case for him going up, but I think, you know, he's, I own like, I mean, 17 leagues and I've got 14 Harris shares. So, you know, he's been pretty solid. He's been good. Hasn't been great. You know, everything's, he's in a run first offense. You know, they ran the ball 46 times, which was great, but how often is that going to happen? And I think he's pulled his hammy. And don't buy Patriots running backs is something I should have listened to before I bought 14 shares out of 17, I guess. But I did like him coming out.
But I mean, even with Damian Harris, like they ran the ball 50-something times. And, you know, even before the hamstring strain, Ramondre Stevenson was getting the bulk of the carries. So even if he, even looking like the most impressive back, he wasn't leading the team in carries. So you kind of sit there and go, you know, and Bill Belichick, like Sony Michel, you know, won him, you know, helped him down a playoff run, and the next season he was in the doghouse. So there's no guarantee, even if Damian Harris has a good finish to the season, he's going to be the man next year.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. So we're talking about, you know, startup value. Where do you think he goes in startup next year, CMC? Do you think someone pounces on him at the end of that second round or even earlier? If he gets healthy, you know, he looks good in training.
I think the middle of the second round is probably where he'll go, especially in super flex tight end premium drafts. You know, you've got three or four really good young wide receivers now that probably justify being first round picks. There's probably half a dozen running backs that definitely go in front of him. And there's definitely five or six quarterbacks that go in front of him. So I think you're looking middle of that second round, which is about fair. Like that's where, you know, that's where the likes of Ezekiel Elliott and that were going this season. So, you know, when you look
at Barkley was there, right? Barkley was sort of towards the end of the second. So I reckon it's probably a similar situation with CMC.
Yeah, I think that's another one. Like, you know, Saquon is probably of those running backs that have had a suboptimal season. I think Saquon's probably the one I'm buying over CMC. I think he's in a situation similar to what Joe Mixon was, where this offseason, if he can get a decent quarterback, well, let's face it, any quarterback's going to be an upgrade from Daniel Jones.
It'd be interesting to see what they do, right? That might impact him heavily. But, yeah, I think I agree with that too. I think Ray GQ did a good little breakdown in one of his podcasts for Destination Devy, what he'd trade these two players for. And I think Barkley was a good price for what you can get him. I think he's very undervalued. I bought him today in the league first overall in points four, and I got the buy. I sort of sold out some picks. I bought him straight up for Calvin Ridley and Tyler Conklin. Is it Conklin, the tight end? So, I was pretty happy to get that trade done. I think Ridley comes back, you know, and is a wide receiver one. But sort of that, if he doesn't, that's, you know, I'm bailing on that risk. And it's a win now, extra win now play. You've got to start 12 in this league. So it's a pretty deep league. So I was happy to get, you know, a starter, there.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Then on injury news, we've also got Swift and Kamara. I think Kamara looks like he's out again this week. Swift, I think, are they on the bye or he's just injured? I think he's just injured.
He's out.
Yeah, very disappointing. Swift is obviously looking great. I think he comes back in time for the playoffs. So, you know, no real news there. But what about Kamara? That's a bit of a just a bit of never ending story, isn't it? Seems like he's listed week to week to week, and looks like he's going to play. And they're wrapping him in cotton wool. I don't know if it's another Michael Thomas situation at the Saints, but you know, you're not feeling too good if you got Kamara in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's kind of descending into a very un-Sean Payton scenario down there with players, you know, running their own ship and, you know, Kamara being in and out and in and out. Like, Deontay Harris is now serving a suspension as well. Like, it's not the cleanly run organization that, you know, we've become accustomed to down there. So I've got no idea what's going on with Kamara. Like, I'd probably put him with, you know, him, Dalvin Cook, CMC. They can all go on that, you know, that scrap heap of, you know, running backs I'm willing to move off on, even if I lose a little bit of value.
Once they get a bit older and they start getting injured, right? It's just, you don't feel so good. I think even last year, I think you were in a startup and you took Barkley, and I took him somewhere too last year, and it didn't feel the best. It was the right move to make at the time, but it just doesn't feel right once these running backs starting to get injured. It's not the best feeling.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I feel dirty taking running backs early, regardless of who they are. Like, I mean, you know, you sit there and look at the top 12 running backs this season, and like some of them, like James Conner's the RB8, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson's the RB7, like Austin Eckler's the RB3, but you don't feel comfortable with him. Like Leonard Fournette's the RB6.
Patterson's the RB, do you say that already? Patterson's the RB8, yeah. RB7, whatever. It's just, crazy times.
Yeah, even if you go to the top end of the RB2 conversation, where you've got Gaskin at 16, Henderson at 14, Harris at 13, like, James Robinson's a mid RB2 as well. Like most of them, you're not guaranteed having a job end of the season. And most of them didn't start the season as their RB1. You know, some of Damien Harris's job security as RB13 was the fact that Ramondre Stevenson fumbled the ball 3 times in 3 games to start the season. So even his job security could have been very, very different if Stevenson holds onto the ball early on. Like, and I think that just, I don't know, like it just feels like it's a lot easier for those running backs to be interchangeable. And I think fantasy football is probably going to start going the way of, as the bell cow running backs drop away, and there stops, but there, you know, we stop having as many Elliots and that Elliots, Derrick Henrys that have the sole use of that backfield. I think fantasy football will start going the way of the NFL, where, to be honest, running backs don't matter. You know,
how dare you? How dare you, Mr. Ball? I think it's a case of the haves and the haves not, right? You're feeling pretty good about yourself if you got Najee, you got Taylor, maybe Swift, and then you know, hopefully the other running backs that you've got, they're healthy. Feeling pretty good with Fournette, you know, Eckler this year, but going forward, who knows?
But it's just it's a lot of capital to have invested in a player where Very quickly they could be useless. Like Austin Ekeler, if they draft a running back in the second or third round, do you feel comfortable, like his value, what, halves? You look at James Robinson. James Robinson was a stud, like top 10 running back last season, rookie. You're thinking, great, he's young, he's healthy, he's putting up numbers. And in the space of a day, he was worth a fifth.
You need a bit of luck, right? You need a bit of Aaron Jones coming back. Like everyone was selling him. I think I sold him because he was supposed to. Green Bay was supposed to do the smart thing and move on, but they didn't.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at
the owners that held, but some of that stuff we just don't know, right?
Yeah, if you look at what AJ Dillon's done in the back half of this season with Aaron Jones out and banged up, like the smart move was to move on. Like AJ Dillon hasn't missed a beat. And I think that's where it's coming back to. Teams are now realizing that paying running backs isn't the smart option. Dalvin Cook's banged up again. CMC's on a second contract where they're paying him $14 million a year to sit on the bench. I still think Ezekiel Elliott's a better running back than Tony Pollard, but, and there's plenty of numbers out there to say that situationally he's a better running back than Tony Pollard, but the way they're being used frees Pollard up to be more effective. It's just a lot of capital to be tied up in one player, whereas if you look at someone like Michael Gallup, who, he's had wide receivers drafted over him, and traded for multiple times. He was worth a first, a couple of years ago when he broke onto the scene, and he's still worth an early second. So,
yeah, probably T. Higgins and Chase, right?
T. Higgins.
Took a bit of value hit T. Higgins, but I think most people aren't selling him that much cheaper, really. Not the level that James Robinson was going at anyway. Etienne was healthy, just giving him away. So I guess that sort of, we're going to save it to the end of the pod, but now that we're on that sort of running back spiel, and I'm here for all your Najee Harris shares, Bull, especially in Kraken. I'll gladly take him off your hand.
He's got two more years before he goes on the trade block.
Well, you won't need him till then. I'll give him back to you in 2 years. All right, you can. While we're talking about that sort of outlook, how are you feeling if, like, we both, I think, overvalue or maybe properly value quarterbacks in the Superflex League, and I think we're pretty happy to go 1-2 QB in the first two rounds, or maybe QB RB QB. How you feeling now if you've hit on Brady, you've hit Cousins in the rounds 6 and 8 or whatever they were going in, and you took Taylor, you took Swift, you took a couple of tight ends. You're probably, unless you got unlucky and you've taken Henry or taken CMC, you're probably, winning that league, right? Or
yeah,
close to it.
Yeah, I think it comes down to what you're actually trying to do in a startup. I think if you're willing to, and you could make the same argument going the other way, like if you, Herbert's underperformed a bit, Murray's underperformed a bit, Josh Allen has had a tough year. But if you got it right and you took Lamar at the 110, and then, the 202, you took, who was going in that range? Say Dak. And then, during the offseason, you traded a first for Damian Harris and a second for Elijah Mitchell. All of a sudden you're in a similar situation where you've got, the RB10, the RB14, the QB3 and the QB6. I think one way is set up for longer term success, and one way is a safer bet for success now. Like, if you're taking running back, older wide receiver, as say a Chris Godwin or a Mike Evans in the third round, and then you're hitting on Kirk Cousins, Tom Brady, and who, you know, what tight end would have been in that range? You're probably looking at someone like a Fant or a Hockenson. It's a very safe way to set up a team that'll be competitive in year one. But taking, you know, Brady could drop out at any moment. Cousins, there's no guarantee that he'll, you know, be the quarterback in Minnesota next year. And with those running backs, they're one Achilles away from being worth nothing. I think Akers will be back, but value-wise, if you spent second-round startup capital on Akers this year, he'll never be a second-round startup pick again, even if he is the RB1 next season, just because people will hold that over him for the rest of his career.
They definitely will. So nothing changes for your end. You don't really QB's early.
You know, for me, taking Patrick Mahomes 102 in a startup behind Jonathan Taylor is fine, because I know that in a year's time, Patrick Mahomes will still be 102. Jonathan Taylor may be the 204 or the 302. Or, you know, Leonard Fournette, what did he have? He had a 100-catch season in Jacksonville and rushed for 1,000 yards or something stupid. And the next season he got traded and he was a 15th or 16th round startup pick.
Bit of a unique season with Fournette, but I get what you're saying. It is pretty volatile. Look, for me, I'm with you too. I think maybe that Jonathan Taylor question, maybe I smash him early. But the good thing about getting those two quarterbacks is, right, you can ignore quarterback for the next however many drafts. You know, if you've got Brady and Cousins, you're probably winning the league. But with that 112, you're not getting a startable QB next year, unless you can flip it, which, you know your league, right? There's plenty of leagues where there's bad owners or maybe not bad, but maybe owners that overvalue those rookie picks. So maybe you can flip it for another QB veteran, and there's plenty of players that do that. Who knows? Maybe that's a smarter move. But for me personally, I'm with you. I'd want to go those two QBs or the two QBs in the first three rounds, at least anyway, just to shore that position off and then moving. Just ignore it for the next 4 or 5 years.
I think it's a lot. I think it's a lot easier to use your draft picks to buy running backs and wide receivers than it is to buy quarterbacks. Like, unless you're in a league where, you know, quarterbacks are criminally undervalued and you can go and get them. Like, realistically, Jalen Hurts is a good fantasy quarterback this year. But he's not guaranteed a job next year. He's still going to cost you a first and a second, minimum. You know, Tom Brady's still probably costing you a first, when if you're buying him in the middle of this season, there's no guarantee you get more than 8 games. At some point, he will retire, and it's getting sooner rather than later. Whereas, you know, you can go and send a second and a third for Leonard Fournette or a Cordarrelle Patterson. And if you've got Josh Allen 104 and, you know, Dak Prescott 208, you can afford to send your second and third for, you know, running backs that are lesser values. And you can fill it in. You can buy Damian Harris's, your Elijah Mitchell's, your Leonard Fournette's, the ones that pop up every, you know, your James Robinson's. You know, if you buy them early.
Good luck getting Fournette for a second or third. That should be his price. I had to pay a first. I got someone else back with him. But yeah, I think a second or third, if you're a non-contender and you've got him, it's just, you know, it's a smashing set for me every time. But it is what it is, I guess. But yeah. So, Bull, did you know something you might not have heard of?
What do you think?
It's all happening. So I just want to talk just quickly while Bull's having his little intermission, his little break, about the week 14 bye.
How are you going, Mark?
He's back.
Sorry.
should have brought him in, mate. Bring him on air. Give him an intro. Tell us the titles down under. Awesome foursome.
Yeah.
I was just saying, I don't know if you've heard about this. It's been pretty quiet, but week 14, there's a few players on bye. Who would have thought?
Anyone would have thought that, like, the NFL extended the season 18 months, 2 years ago, and, you know, added an extra week to the season. Like, it's shocking that, you know, it's shocking that when we extended this season, the byes happened a week later. Like,
yeah. So I was in the league today, and the commissioner, you know, is probably a bit of a better commissioner than me. He discussed it at length, put a poll up in all his leagues. You know, everyone had their say in it, their piece in it. Do we keep it as is for week 14, or do you want to move it to week 15? Everyone voted. It was not an issue. Put to bed early in the preseason. Turn up to week 14, and one owner's got all their QBs on a bye. So, yeah, look, it blew up a little bit in the league. We won't go into specifics. Maybe I think the owner was a new owner, so maybe they'll caught a little bit off guard. But, I mean, it was all over Twitter. It was all over podcasts everywhere. You know, and then the owner, the commissioner gets 600 messages. You know, people would talk about leaving the league and all sorts of things. And my view was didn't affect me because I was number one in that league. I was on a bye. But you've had the advantage of those QBs not having a bye through 14 weeks. You can't turn around now and complain about it now. You know, fair enough if you wanted to have your say in the off season, but you know, it is what it is. I think it's pretty poor to you know, or maybe not poor, maybe it's just a little bit naive if you're a new owner. But you know, for us veterans, I think this is something that should have been addressed earlier. And you can vote in the next year. We just don't know what's going to happen, right? Maybe week 17. Yeah. It all falls apart. So maybe this is the good move to keep it as it is. But you've had how many weeks to trade for those players? You know, unless your league's got a trade deadline, and then you should know that, and you know that your players are out in that week 14 bye. So, you know, start moving them.
Yeah, I think there's two parts to this. And, I mean, I kicked a hornet's nest a couple of weeks ago when I was that
that's
dude.
That's unlike you, Bully.
I was the dude in the league that, you know, chirped up when the commish popped up in the middle of week 12 and said, oh, by the way, guys, we're moving the playoffs back a week. We did a vote in one league. It was unanimous. So I'm doing it in all my leagues. That commish happened to own Jalen Hurts, Jonathan Taylor. I think he had Tua as well. So he had a number of players that, of value that were, you know, not playing this week. So the optics weren't great that he owned players that were going to give him an advantage by being available. His team is probably good enough that he would have won anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, it's just a bad look to ask for it.
It's a bad look as the commissioner.
If you're a commissioner, yeah, you can't be doing that. That's just
I feel like that's
Bush League.
Yeah, as a commissioner, you need to, you know, and some of this is why I don't commission leagues anymore. I've had a couple where I feel like, you know, I've been sent trades that were well in my favor, but I feel wrong in accepting them because as commissioner, I feel like I need to be held to a higher standard than the league just because, you know, you want the league to survive and do well and, you know, flourish, and you don't want to destroy it. So I think there's two parts to this question. The part one is no, finals should not be in week 14. Finals should start in week 15. Commissioners should have looked at this before the season and said, hey, guys, commissioner discretion here. The byes finish in week 14. Finals start week 15, 16, 17. And you know what? If you're one of those leagues that has a four-week finals period, it's tough shit because it's the same as it was last year. Last year, the buys finished in week 13 and finals for your leagues with 4 weeks finals were 14, 15, 16, 17. So it's the same problem week 17 last year versus week 18 this year. So that's point number one. Finals shouldn't have been in week 14. Commissioners should have realized that before the season. Players should have pointed it out to their commissioner before the season. Point number two is week 10, 11, 12, 13 is not the time to be making this change. Like, players have used their foresight. They've done their research. For my mind, looking at your squad and going, hang on, week one of finals is week 14. Week one of finals, I'm going to be missing Jalen Hurts. Noticing that is no different to going, hang on, week one of finals, Jalen Hurts has an amazing strength of schedule on the run home. He plays very easy opposition in the finals few weeks. Noticing strength of schedule is no different to noticing who you're playing in the week in the finals. If one of your players has a bye in the finals, or if one of your players is going to have wrapped up their season by week 18 and you're worried they'll get rested in week 18, noticing things like that is part of being an owner. You know, if you're one of those owners that just goes, oh, Flea Flicker suggested that he's going to score 12 points this week, I'll start him. Fantastic. But to be honest, your tide's probably not good enough to win a championship anyway. There's two parts to this question, and both of them are wrong. Yeah. Like, especially commissioners, A, if you didn't notice, you know, you're asleep at the wheel, and B, if you're making Bush League decisions to be making the change in week 13, that's also not the right thing to be doing either.
Just be better. Be better people. I think in my particular league, the commission was trying to look after a new owner, which was good of him. I think he's a great commissioner, and he's really trying to just help the league out. I think he even made a trade last year, you know, that sort of cost him a bit of value, but he was just trying to make it competitive. So it is what it is. But and again, in this instance, it was a new owner, right? So, you know, they're new to Dynasty. Fair enough. But for the commissioners, they should have had this discussion already, and we did in all those leagues. We did. I think I commissioned two leagues. I had a quick discussion, and we just moved. I think in Vinyl and in the Pirate League, we moved them to week 15. So just be better. Give you the commissioners, don't be giving them grief. Guys, send them a big thank you and well done. And I think if you have an issue with anything in your league, I think that, you know, it's best if you can just go to the commission one-on-one and say, look, you know, this is how I feel about something.
Yeah.
I'll leave it in your hands, but this is my, you know, as soon as you put it in that group chat and you start, you know, hammering people, you're just looking out for yourself, really. So I think, you know, it's probably better if you can just reach out to the commission one-on-one and say, look, I'll leave it in your hands, but, you know, how do you feel about this situation? And then the commission can take it further.
And I think I think it's a note for, you know, for a lot of things. Like, you know, even little things. Like, I think this is one thing Scott does really well in his leagues. When there's a London game, he's also one of the first people to go, hey, guys, just a reminder, there's a London game. Get your lineups in early. They're just little things like that where you feel better being in the league. That, and I mean, let's face it, plenty of us play in leagues where we don't know the person who's commissioning. You know, so little actions by that from the commissioner just make us feel a little bit safer when we're transferring money via a PayPal or something like that to somebody's bank account. You know, little actions like that from a commissioner just make us feel a little bit better.
Commissioner of the Year, Mr. Scott T.
Yeah, he's a good man.
He does. He goes above and beyond. I'm sick of losing to him now. I think I lost in a final last year. I was ahead by a point. Had the Patriots defense playing the Bills, and I could have pulled the defense, played no defense. And they got negative points, and he beat me. And I think he's got a little bit over me. So, as much as a good commissioner is, I'm sick of losing to him.
It makes up for the one you got me on this year with the score, with the stat correction.
That wasn't in the final. This was the final, but that was a good stat correction. It worked out well for me. And I think I'm on a one and you're four, so we'll probably play each other week two if you make it through. It looks like in that league. So, we'll see what happens.
I haven't actually had a look at that league yet. There's a few others that I was more concerned with about whether I even got into the finals.
I think we're both in the Frankenstein League, which is great. I snuck in. I rested Najee and started Akers to do a sneaky move, and it nearly cost me the number one seed. I think got in by 1 point. I got the bye.
I wasn't happy about that. I wasn't expecting to get a bye. I thought I was going to be playing in week one of the finals. So I did the old sneaky subbed Cole Beasley in for can't remember who I rested, but I rested somebody and put Cole Beasley in with the intention of trading him. And as it was, I just snuck in by, I think, about 4 points onto that four seed. So I get a week off on week one, which is nice.
Look, it's a great league. It's a great format. If you want to join next year, guys, one way to do it is join our Patreon. So tier one of the Patreon, $3 per month, gets you access to the T2T team group chat on Discord. Tier two, $5 a month, early access to the waiver wire episodes just for those Patreons. You get an entry into our listener league, so you get a chance to become an entrant, not guaranteed, and also the group chat. Tier three, $10 per month. That's the price of a coffee in Melbourne. One-on-one roster analysis, free entry into the listener league, so you're guaranteed free entry. It's normally a $25 entry, so, you know, 10 bucks. Get your entry into that league and also the Patreon, and then you get the group chat and the early waiver wire episode access. Bit of fun there. Hopefully, you know, we might have expanded again next year with some more divisions and create some bigger monsters. Finally, I think just before we wrap up, because it is that time of the year where, you know, finals are happening, if not they're happening next week, thought we might just talk about a couple of win now players, who you're trading for, you know, if you're making that move to win, if you've bailed already out of the finals, who are you selling? So a couple of win now players, Bull, that you're targeting in your leagues.
Yeah, I was just having a sneaky look at Will Ferrell, to see if I did get the two seed, and I missed the two seed. Which means I am in your playoff bracket, but I'm also playing our boy Scott week one of the finals. So no doubt, it'll be a good match in week two of the final if it's Scott or me.
Yeah, great. Look forward to it.
I think there's I'm very much anti-trade deadline as well. So I think trade deadlines should be abolished. I think it's a great opportunity for teams to, you know, miss the playoff to, you know, recoup some value and get better really quickly. You know, if a playoff team loses a Jalen Hurts or a, you know, one of those top tier players, I mean, even if you're looking at something like, you know, if you've got to play week one of the playoffs this week and you're without Jonathan Taylor, even just the sneaky ability to flip a JT for a Najee Harris because he's playing this week. You know, the team that's in the playoffs might be willing to lose a little bit of value to get that win. I suppose there's two real ways to approach, you know, buying pieces in this period. I think if you're looking at tight end, there's a couple of good options. I think George Kittle is still pretty depressed value even after his blow-up game on the weekend. There's still people that are having him outside the top five tight ends. So if you've got some capital or you've got a player sitting on IR that's, you know, got some value like a Keenan Allen or something like that, you know, flipping him for a Kittle or a, you know, a Joe Mixon, you know, it's not a bad way to go about it. But your other option is to go some bargain basement players. Like you can go after a Hunter Renfro, who's, you know, putting up some good numbers. Russell Gage has, you know, finally come good after my attempt to buy so much of him in the offseason. And even if you're looking at someone like a Kirk Cousins or a Carson Wentz that are putting up, you know, really good numbers, but their value isn't reflected. You know, so there's two ways. You can go bargain basement that are putting up good numbers, or you can go after those premier assets.
Nice. I like that. For me, it's Leonard Fournette. Hopefully you've got him already. But if not, he's a target that I'm going to trade for. I think in one league I'm in with you, Bull, you traded him for two Devy seconds. I think that's the down under dynasty, one of Brandon's leagues. I tried to get him for a single second, didn't get a counter, and you chucked in another second, or I think it might have been a Devy third. Which was pretty early, right? So obviously his price has gone up a bit since then, but that was a good move. Cordarrelle Patterson, you know, both sides, if I'm win now, I'm trying to buy him all day. And if I own him, I'm trying to get out. Like, and who knows what situation develops there next year. He's probably fine, but you got Matt Ryan. Does Ridley come back? Do they draft a running back? Lots of questions there. So I'd be pretty happy to get out to you know, in all honesty, you pick Cordarrelle Patterson up off the waiver wires for free, or you know, in round 29 last year, if you had to get a second for him, I think that's a, you know, good chance to cash out. So that's probably the two I'm making. In terms of quarterback, I really like the Cousins move you mentioned, or Brady, but I doubt you can get Brady anywhere. Probably a contender's got him, and you know, I think he, in most leagues, he's the QB1. You know, at his age, I think he's going for the MVP as well. It's pretty phenomenal.
I think Kirk Cousins is a really good one to go after, just because, and I mean, even Carson Wentz, like, nobody really wants to own him, but the numbers he's putting up at the moment are good enough to, you know, be QB1 numbers. You know, and then Kirk Cousins is sitting at QB6 or 7 in most leagues as well, where, you know, you're probably buying him for a single first or a first and a third.
He's probably guaranteed to be a QB1, right, for the next few years. I mean, especially if he stays in Minnesota, you know, that's the only question mark. But if he does, he's pretty much guaranteed to be a QB1 or thereabouts, you know, top 14 QB. You just bank on that, right?
Yeah, and, you know, he's got two really good weapons. Like, you know, that's the number one thing for me. Like, he's throwing the ball to two stud wide receivers that, yes, Thielen's getting a bit older, but I think he's on contract for two more years, or at least this year and next year.
He's got Irv Smith coming back as well, which is, you know, another target.
Yeah. Yeah. So he'll do really well. And I mean, obviously there's the Dalvin Cook legal situation and the Dalvin Cook injury situation, which, you know, it makes you wonder, but it seems to be that whatever running back they put in there does the job for them. So I think that's just a really good offensive line situation that makes running backs look, you know, look solid. Hunter Renfro and Russell Gage are probably my two. You know, you're probably getting them for a second or a third, and, you know, the last few weeks they put up some really good numbers.
People are sleeping on Renfro, or, you know, maybe they're not, but I wasn't. I had a look earlier at his output, you know, the last 4 or 5 weeks, and it's been sensational. Jump weekend, guys.
Since Henry Ruggs went down to prison, Hunter Renfro's hit a different level. So, you know, I don't know whether I'm expecting that next year. But to be perfectly honest, even if you pay a second for him and you only get this year out of him, the juice is worth the squeeze to see whether maybe he continues that next year. It doesn't seem like they've got any interest in using Bryan Edwards. So,
yeah, I think it's probably late second too, right? If you're a contender, yeah, you're talking about maybe the final, you know, the 108 to 112 sort of thing. So, smash accept.
Yeah, the only other one I would throw out there, and this is a buy, whether you win now, win next year, win the year after, buy Mike Gesicki. The dude is tight end 4 on the season. And for some reason, no one wants to talk about him in the top 8 tight end discussion. Like we want to talk about Waller and Andrews and Hockenson and Pitts and Fant and, you know, Pat Freiermuth and everything. He was tight end 5 last year. He was tight end 5 for the second half of the season before, and he's tight end 4 this year. And he is a whole 26 years old. Like, go and find the owner, unless it's me, because I'm not selling him. Unless you're offering me Kyle Pitts or Travis Kelce, I'm not selling him. But, you know, if you win now, go and get him, because he's a young enough asset that he's going to put up good numbers for you now. But, you know, he's young enough that it's not just, you know, throwing money down the drain.
Nice. I like all those moves. I think we're just about on the 50-minute mark. It's getting close to 9:30 over here, so I might let you go. Mr. Bullitt, is there anything else you wanted to mention before we wrap up or talk about just quickly?
No, I think good luck to those teams that have made the finals. Good luck to those teams that are playing in consolation brackets. And, you know, if your league still has a trade deadline, now's the time to go and speak to your commission and say, hey, in the off-season, let's get rid of this rubbish.
We hate trade deadlines here at T2T Dynasty. All right. Thanks, Mr. Bull.
Have a good one, Matt.
I'll chat to you soon.
Yeah.